This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Curriculum, a series where we discuss the A to Z of education, looking at challenges facing both local and global education systems, but also searching for solutions and exploring different ways of doing things when it comes to learning and education and teaching. So we're kicking off our first episode for the year. And today I'm joined by Cheryl Ann Fernando, a Teach for Malaysia alumni who was also part of the National Education Council for Policy Reform in 2018 and 2019. But now she's on a mission to provide leadership skills to head teachers around the country through the organization Pemimpin GSL, which she is the CEO of. So currently Pemimpin has worked with over 200 schools from all over Malaysia. And Cheryl joins me now to tell me more about the work the organization carries out and why she believes that excellent schools begin with excellent leaders. Welcome, Cheryl. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me. And of course, you're not a stranger to BFM, and I'm sorry to make you do this, but you know, for the sake of those who might not know, can you tell me a little bit about yourself? You know, how you went from corporate, how you became, you know, interested in education and education reform and all of that.
Yeah. So I started out as a PR consultant, and at the same time, when I was in PR, I used to tutor refugee students. And it was from there that I developed a passion for education and really wanting to make a difference and provide strong support for our students. And from there, I eventually left my PR job to join Teach for Malaysia and to become a teacher. And the rest is history. I think I've never looked back and wanted to go back into corporate since.
Okay, all right. And it was must have been quite a jump, isn't it? It must have been quite a, I mean, for lack of a better word, a culture shock, isn't it, from what you were doing to what you suddenly faced and all of that?
Yeah, it was. But I think more than me, for my parents especially, it was like, oh no, what is she doing with her life? I at that time assured them that I would go back into corporate, which I never did. But I think the shock, of course, came from, you know, the different ways of working and, you know, the school environment. But ultimately, you know, teaching was always the most satisfying thing for me.
Okay. I mean, that's wonderful. And, you know, of course, your story has been made into a film, an award-winning film at that, Adiwiraku. If anyone's interested to get the long story of, you know, of what you did, they can always catch that. But, you know, just looking back, and I am I right in saying that you were also part of our local education system as well?
Yes,
okay.
Yes,
so similar to me. And looking back, what did you find most meaningful about your own education?
I think for me, it was how much of effort my teachers took into building our leadership skills. So school, you know, the traditional school and just studying in the classroom was never the highlight for me. It was always the extracurricular activities.
Yeah.
And my teachers took a lot of effort into preparing us for competitions, you know, building our leadership skills and how can we, you know, present in debates and, you know, choral speaking and all that. And I think just looking at that, that has become one of the most meaningful things when I think about my own education in our local schools.
Mm-hmm. And also, I suppose that's also kind of what you want to make sure that still continues, you know, in our current local education system, right? Maybe we're seeing not enough of it. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah. I think because we think that education is just what happens in the classroom, but then for students, oftentimes it's all of these other things, right? Taking part in competitions, you know, when they can build their leadership skills. But how do we bring all of this into the classroom as well so that it's not just that they have to wait for, you know, when I meet my debate friends or, you know, when I build relationships or in my choral speaking groups, but how can we incorporate this in mainstream education? I think that's the challenge for our education system.
Yeah, I know. Looking back at my Form 4 education, I don't think I was in class at all. I was busy trying to join choir, choral speaking,
exactly,
debate team. You know, I don't think anyone ever saw me in class. But yeah, I mean, how do we make that holistic? How do we make it so that every part of our education is fun, isn't it? And ultimately benefits us. I guess, you know, my next question would be then, what does an ideal education look like to you?
Yeah, I think it's one where every child can fulfill their own potential and whatever they may be. And, you know, school and the education that they receive acts as a platform for them to develop these skills, this knowledge and this motivation that they can fulfill their potential. And when I used to teach, my students used to ask me, teacher, will you be disappointed if I become just a waiter? And, you know, you go to this restaurant and I'm the waiter there. And I'm like, you know, if that is your full potential and if you believe that, that's what I want to do, and you're going to be the best waiter in the restaurant, then I'll be proud of you. But the idea is that you achieve your potential and I help you realize your potential. And I think sometimes what we do now is we try to put them into a mold, or like, you know, you have to get certain results, you have to score A's, without realizing that actually we need to let them see what is it that they really want to do and what is their potential. So for me, that is what an ideal education looks like. And just thinking about my own children as well, right? What would I want for them is this, right? I just want them to look back and say, oh, wow, this is my potential and I've achieved it because of the education given to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I couldn't have put it better myself. You know, we want so much for our children. We, you know, because of, you know, ideas around us and the people around us, we think, oh, maybe this is the certain way, and then maybe you're influenced by the kiasu parents and you start to lose focus of what's actually important. But of course, you were a teacher and you're still involved in education and all of that. How would you describe your own philosophy towards teaching? You know, one of the most critical components in education, as we've discussed before.
Yeah. So for me, when I was teaching, I ensured that it was very student-centered. So, you know, how can my students understand the why behind learning? I taught English, and I taught English in a school where a lot of my students struggled with English, and even, you know, they were very fearful of the language. So how do I make them understand that, you know, why is it important to be functionally literate in English, and how will this help you? I think for me, that was very important. And even till today, when we work with school leaders, right, it's a lot of getting them to understand the why behind doing what they do. And for me, that has been my philosophy, you know, since I started until today.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If I can just share, my late mother was also an English teacher, and it was the same, you know, for her. It was making the kids to understand how important, it's not like I need you to get an A, I need you to know how this is going to help you function in life. Yeah. Isn't it? Because, yeah. And, you know, she taught from, like, you know, sultan's kids to, like, you know, fishermen's children. And it was always the same. You need this to survive. And I suppose, you know, that is also your philosophy, isn't it? Okay. When you were teaching, and of course, you know, you were thrown into it, it was a whole new sort of atmosphere. What would you say were some of the biggest challenges you faced, you know, when you started teaching?
So there's so many, a wide range of it. But I think for me, it came in the form of trying to undo the structures and the way that my students were learning before this, and to, you know, introduce and share with them like a new way of learning, and especially English, right? A language that was unfamiliar. And also, I think at the same time, there was a lot of poverty and issues within the community in where I was teaching that hindered my students from, you know, really focusing in class, right? So many times they would come to class either hungry, or, you know, they would have to choose to drop out of school because they needed to work to support their families. And it was all these barriers that I had no control over, because, you know, I can't undo these things. My control was in the classroom, right? How can I give you a good education? But because of all these challenges that exist outside for them, it made it very difficult for them to thrive in the classroom. And I feel for me, you know, that was the biggest challenge towards achieving anything that I wanted to do in school.
Yeah, because even with your best intentions and, you know, giving it your best in the classroom, you can't quite, you know, do anything about what's happening outside, right? And that, of course, affects their education and their learning.
Sure.
Okay, yes. All right. And I guess, you know, you said you wanted to break the structure of, you know, existing structures, right? What types of reforms did you think were necessary at the time for our local education system?
Yeah, I think for me, it is empowerment. And I still say that today, like every interview that I go to, it's empowerment. We need to ensure that our schools, our districts and our states are given enough empowerment to decide what is best for them in that area. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this like a one-size-fits-all education system cannot work anymore, because we know our schools, no two schools in Malaysia are the same, right? You can group them into certain categories, but every school has their own challenge. Every teacher will face their own challenge, and we need to allow them, empower them, for them to make decisions that they feel is the best for that school, for that district, or even for that state. And I see our education system gradually moving towards this. I mean, this is outlined in the blueprint. When I was part of the National Education Policy, we spoke about this as well. But I think, you know, this is really the crucial step that if we want to really see reforms in the system, it's really empowering our teachers, our schools, our districts to make the decisions that they feel is the best for their schools.
Mm-hmm. So sort of a decentralization and those yeah. sorts of things, right? Okay. All right. And do you think that's an easy sort of aspect to reform? Or what do you think are some of the easiest aspects of schooling or education that, you know, we could tackle first, you know, which are easy, sort of low hanging fruit? And you know, on the flip side, what are some of the hardest ones?
Yeah. So for me, I think the quick wins and some easy things that we can do is providing our teachers with very strong, high quality training for them to build their skills and ideas. I think especially, you know, these 2 years have been extremely tough for them, you know, just navigating through online teaching. And even now it's a hybrid, yeah. you know, how can they continuously build their skills and ideas to provide the best for our students? Also, you know, working with the many education nonprofits in Malaysia towards a common goal of improving our systems, I think this is very easy and can be done almost instantly. And the hardest part, and although just now I said it's the most important, is actually, you know, the bureaucracies and the structures within the system that has been there for many years, right? It is a lot of paperwork, it's still very top-down, and, you know, to dismantle this and to empower teachers and school is necessary, but probably one of the toughest, and it will take time. And I see efforts that we are starting to get there. I think the Ministry of Education has always spoken about empowering at least the district and the state offices for now. Like, you can decide which programs are best for your schools. Mm. But it's a process, right? Yeah. Toughest to do. And I see the challenge from the Ministry of Education as well to do this, because for so many years, it's been, you know, it's been a centralized system, right? How do you break this? This will take the longest, but perhaps the most crucial one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, because if we're still getting the same results with the same method, obviously something needs to change,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. And I just want to go back to something else you said earlier about, you know, how you can't quite control what's happening outside, right? And, you know, I was reading that school reforms cannot control, you know, as you said, you know, what happens to children before they mm-hmm. enter school and what happens during non-school hours. And mm-hmm. I'm sure you agree with that. But, you know, these experiences have tremendous influence on how students perform in school. But do you think that policymakers are taking this into account when they are talking about reforms? I mean, you did mention it was one of the biggest challenges you faced.
Yeah. So I think just reflecting back on my time in the National Education Policy Review Committee, we looked at the holistic development of a child. So there was the free breakfast program, you know, because we know that children should not come to school hungry, or they should not have to think about where their next meal is coming from, right?
Yeah.
So when we introduce this, you know, hopefully it then increases their nutrition and gets them to focus better in the classroom. We also looked at after school support programs, because we know a lot of parents, you know, especially if a single session schools, sometimes parents can't be there, right?
Yeah.
Or they, you know, where do they leave their child, you know, during that few hours after school. So we looked at after school support program and what happens to the child. So this covers like all the different parts of it, so that we can look at a very holistic development of a child. But I feel like now the efforts are there, but perhaps it's in pockets, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have certain bodies working on nutrition, and then people working on after school programs, but
yeah.
It hasn't really come together, I think, for us to see that effect on a child. I always hold true to, like, you know, it takes a village to raise a child, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we need all the different parts of the community to be working together to ensure that, you know, a child really succeeds. And thinking again about when I was teaching in school, within our school community, a lot of teachers would put their money together so that we can provide after school meals for the
yeah,
students.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think every teacher would give like 50 or 100 ringgit a month so we can provide this for the students. We would do like extra classes after school so that, you know, at least their time is filled. They would do the breakfast program in the morning. So all of this is efforts by the school itself. So if we can see this on a national scale, I think it would be amazing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. We're just going to go for a quick break, Cheryl. But when we come back, I'm going to ask you to talk about teachers now, and I will shift our focus a little bit. I'm speaking today to Cheryl N. Fernando. She's the CEO of Pemimpin GSL. This is our series curriculum where we talk about the A to Z of education, looking at challenges, but also solutions. And after this quick break, we're going to find out more about, you know, the important role of leadership, you know, to improve education and what and how Pemimpin GSL is helping in that. Keep it right here on Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. And today it's an episode of Curriculum where we discuss the A to Z of education, looking at challenges facing both local and global education systems, but also searching for solutions and exploring different ways of doing things when it comes to our education. So joining me on the show today is Cheryl Ann Fernando. She's the CEO of Pemimpin GSL, which is an organization on a mission to provide leadership skills to head teachers around the country. And we're going to find out more about that after this. But before that, Cheryl, can I just talk to you a little bit about teachers? Yeah. So there is, of course, when I was reading, I saw that there's an international consensus that effective teacher education and development involves offering teachers multiple opportunities to sort of practice and reflect on actual teaching practices, right? Do you think that happens in Malaysia enough? You know, are there enough policies with that sort of goal in mind?
So I think in Malaysia, we have there's a mandate on like X number of days that teachers must go through for professional development. And, you know, this can include whether they want to go for outside courses or whether within the school they're offering anything to support them. I also know that school leaders will usually start the school year by doing like a needs analysis to find out what are the needs, what are the most pressing needs of their teachers and how can they better support them. So I know that there are efforts in all of this, but I think the one thing that we can't deny is the paperwork, is the burden for teachers that doesn't give them that space or that freedom for them to, you know, do a lot of reflection and, you know, to focus on actual teaching practices. But there has been some efforts in reducing this paperwork, but it's still there, right? And a lot of administrative tasks for the teachers that takes their time away from actual teaching in the classroom. And if you speak to a lot of teachers, they will say, you know, they enjoy the teaching in the classroom and they just want to keep doing that, right? Yeah. Without the burden of all this paperwork that exists. But I think there has been some talks of like bringing in volunteer teachers to help them with the paperwork, having teaching assistants. I think recently also the government announced like an additional 18,000 teachers, if I'm not mistaken, are coming into the system so that they can guide and help teachers with the teaching burden so they can really focus on their core work, which is teaching, right? Yeah. So I think the policies are there. But if we can move away from the focus on paperwork and administrative work and go back to what a teacher is supposed to do, I think that would be really ideal.
Yeah, and sorry to keep going back to my mom, but that's what she hated the most. You know, they used to have these record books where they have to write every single thing. My God, she hated it. She loved teaching, but that was like the worst part of it. I'd like to bring in Pemimpin GSL into the conversation now. So, of course, I know, as we've mentioned, you know, I know you're focused on school leadership in Malaysia, right? Can you tell me a little bit about the organization's vision and mission?
Yeah. So our vision is to improve leadership in underserved schools. And we do this by working with school leaders, middle leaders, and also teacher leaders. And we offer like a high range of quality and evidence-based workshops, coaching, as well as allowing teachers to build community and share best practices with each other. So we I started the organization in 2017 alone at that time.
Wow.
And we only had 25 schools that we worked with in our first cohort, 25 very brave schools who took the risk and said, okay, Cheryl, I'll do this with you. And it was really interesting because at that time, you know, as you know, school leaders are perhaps in their 40s or 50s, right? And I went in and I was really young at that time. And they were like, okay, Cheryl, you know, we've been teaching even before you were born. Are you sure you know what you're doing? And I was like, yes, I know, like let's do this together. But they were my first cohort of schools that we worked with, were amazing. And that like just kickstarted this whole amazing thing. And now we have over 200 schools with us and a team of 12 people, you know, working together with me on this. So it's been a journey.
Okay. All right. 17. So that's about 5 years now, right?
Yes. 5 years now.
Gosh. Okay. All right. And I can just imagine that sort of like trepidation of like going to all these These people who, like you said, were teaching before you were born, gosh, but well done. And how do you, I guess, you know, if you could explain how you actually execute those, that vision and mission that you were telling us about.
So we run workshops with our school leaders, and our workshops are unlike, you know, ordinary training sessions. We make it really interesting, very relevant for them, and really focusing on the growth mindset aspect of school leaders, right? How can you, you know, take something and you're thinking about it now, and you're reflecting on it, and you're thinking about your practices as a school leader. And, you know, we're moving school leaders from being just administrative leaders to instructional leaders, where they are now focusing on what's going on in the classroom, because that has proven to be really successful. We know that good school leaders can improve schools by 25%, but only when they are focusing on instructional instructional leadership in the classrooms.
Okay.
We have coaching. So my team coaches the schools on how can they contextualize whatever that we shared with them in the workshop to their schools. We also have masterclass sessions where we, this is for teacher leaders, where they can come in and they can learn different solutions on, you know, assessments, on differentiated learning that they can immediately implement in their classroom. So this is how we are executing the whole thing. And of course, in future, we're thinking of like EdTech, potentially EdTech solutions that can bring all of this together for our schools.
And of course, you've got now you've got a team, you know, after starting solo, now you've got a team with you. Tell me a little bit about how you guys do it, who your team are, and how you guys are going out there and getting all of this done.
Yeah, so my program director is Samuel. So we just brought Samuel on board. I think many people know him. He was the first Malaysian teacher to be the Global Teacher Top 10 finalist. So he joined me in July last year. And previously before this, you know, it was just me and like a team of five of us, right? So I was essentially the only one in leadership. But bringing Samuel on board has been great. Of course, he has a lot of contacts and ideas, and he's been in teaching for 10 years, right?
Yeah.
Besides Samuel, we have, all of us have teaching experience. So we've all taught in schools, whether it's 2 years or whether it's 5 years. And because that context is very important, because we must understand what's going on in school.
Yeah.
Many of us are Teach for Malaysia alumni.
Okay.
just by default. And what we do is that they build the training programs, they look at the curriculum, they look at the measurement and evaluation. If what we're doing is really impactful, they get a lot of feedback from our school leaders so that we are continuously building this, right? So it's a life, right? It's not like a set curriculum that we never look back on, but it's something that we are always getting feedback from our school leaders. So yeah, so we've been doing this for 5 years now, and I'm really excited for like the next 5 years of the campaign and what it can be with now like such an amazing team.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, it's really, really exciting. And of course, as you mentioned, you started off with, I think, what was it, 20 schools, but that's grown exponentially, right, over these last 5 years. Tell me a little bit about those schools, you know, how you select them, or, you know, how you got them to collaborate, those sorts of things.
Yeah, so initially we went through the district, and the district selected for us some of the most schools that needed a lot of help. So if the school principals were new to the school, or they had like a younger school principal with very little training, or they realized that in that community, this school needed the most help. Mm-hmm. So initially we went through that. But when the pandemic hit and we started doing online programs, we started opening it up for selection. So we got school leaders to apply for the programs. And initially I was like, oh no, will anyone apply for this? But we've had such great response. I think teachers really want to learn how to do this better. Trying to make sense of, you know, a pandemic and online teaching is when we grew the most, I think, in 2020. Our masterclass series, in fact, we have like 800 teachers signing up for it, until we had to like divide it into two slots just to accommodate the volume of participants that we were getting for this. So yes, I think initially it was underserved schools, and then now it moved on to more teachers who are very interested in obtaining professional development.
Mm-hmm. And this proves, isn't it? You know, because there's a lot of people who just like to criticize, say, oh, teachers are lazy. They just want to get their salary and they're not interested in teaching. But this proves that that's not the case, isn't it? You're seeing the interest. They really want
Definitely.
To learn and they want to improve, not just their teaching, but the lives of their students, right? Their students' education experience. Maybe you can share some of your success stories, you know, from all of these different collaborations.
Yeah. So one of my favorite stories is Puan Anuradha, who was in our first cohort. She's from SJKT Ladang North Hamak. And when we worked with her, she was one of the youngest school principals at that time. I think she was 36 or 37 only, which is seemingly young for a school principal. Yeah. And every new idea that we would throw to her, she was like, yes, I'll do it. Okay, I'll do it. I'm like, are you sure? She's like, let's try. And within a year, she improved, at that time, the UPSR pass rates from 2% to 48% in just a year.
Wow.
And she did not do a lot of student intervention. It wasn't like, you know, extra classes or, you know, all these modules, but it was teacher interventions. So she just focused on helping her teachers teach better. And she did all these lesson observations with the teachers. You know, she motivated them. She coached her teachers. And she saw such a huge improvement in a year. And today she's like one of the best school leaders in the district. And still, you know, because we keep in touch and I see all her activities and I'm like, wow, this is amazing. So her method is just, if I focus on instructional leadership, if I'm helping my teachers teach better, my school does better, right? Yeah. No need for fancy interventions. And we know research tells us that it's not the most radical or the fanciest interventions that's going to change school. It's actually what's in front of you, right? Mm-hmm. Just teach better in the classrooms, teachers teaching better in the classrooms. And she gave the teachers that space to do that with a lot of support and just empowering the teachers. And I think that that's really a testament to how working with just one school leader can improve and change the lives of all the students in the school.
Oh, that's an amazing story. That's so lovely to hear. And, you know, when you sort of went in to help Puan Anuradha, did you sort of look at areas that she needed help in as such? I'm using air quotes here, and then sort of like devise a plan for her? Is that kind of how it works?
So our training, we have four different parts that we look at. So we look at instructional leadership, strategic leadership, human resource, and operational leadership. So when we run our sessions, we usually cover all the four areas. But when we do our coaching is when we go into the schools and then we help her contextualize the things that she needed most in her school. So, for example, she was a new principal in that school. She, of course, needed to win the support of her teachers, the parents in school as well. So we worked with her on the different strategies that she can employ in school. And Puan Anuradha was really interesting because she was like, I'll try this, Cheryl, you know, I'll do this. So she, and towards, I mean, of course, as for us, it's like a gradual release, right? Because the program is for 2 years, our fellowship is for 2 years. So at the end of like a year and a half, we're like, okay, you can now like, you know, try your own things where we support you. Mm. And she actually had like an exam for parents, for her year one parents.
Wow.
So she brought them into school and like, I'm going to quiz you on everything in the school. What time does school start? Who do you report to? And she went viral because of this exam for parents. The parents loved it. They were like, yes, this is how my kids feel. And now I know so much about the school.
Yeah, so, it's the involvement, right? Yeah. Okay. Oh, wow. That's a lovely story. And and that's important, isn't it? Including people into the conversation. And I just want to focus again on teachers, you know, how important it is it to include them, you know, in the process of sort of creating and executing, these sorts of reforms related to their own professional development.
Yeah, I think many times we leave teachers out of the conversation.
Yeah.
We often forget them, especially in policy or when, you know, there's any sort of decision making, any big decision making, right? I think we never take into account teachers and students as well, right? Students even more so than teachers, right? And just listening to actually what do you think is the problem and what do you want to change? And I think that's why when we were doing the education council, one of the first things that I did was to get a group of 10 teachers to be with me in the committee so that anything that we are proposing, I can share it back with them and like, does this make sense? Like, are you going to use this in your school? Because at that time, I have left teaching as well and it's not fair for me to speak on behalf of teachers or like to know exactly what teachers want because my experience was also different.
Yeah.
So we brought in 10 teachers and they felt really appreciated and they were like, this is what we need, Cheryl. We need to be involved in the decision-making process. And I think we need to, beyond just very superficial engagements with teachers, we need to really push it so they are actually there at the decision-making table and to just get them involved in a lot of conversations.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I think, you know, we can both agree on this, but it's also been proven, you know, decades of scientific research confirm that quality teachers improve student achievement, right? That's pretty much what you also believe. How do you think these sorts of professional development should be actually integrated into local schools, you know, so that local practitioners can identify the problems they face while also working with the experts to sort of identify the solutions?
Yeah, so I think for especially during the pandemic, right, we saw a lot of teachers coming out and giving their own webinars and sharing their best practices. And I thought that was amazing. That's exactly what we want, right? Teachers sharing their own experience of like, this worked in my classroom, this might work in yours. Yeah. And then we elevate the position of teachers to, you know, master trainers, you know, to subject matter experts. And I think in Pemimpin, in our masterclass series, we are getting on teachers to run this masterclass for other teachers so that they are there in that position to provide that professional development, because I think no one else will know the job better than them, right?
Yeah.
Pemimpin, even at Pemimpin, while we all have teaching experience and we can provide the evidence, we still want to hear from teachers on how we can do this better, how can we together improve schools. So I think it's empowering the teachers in the systems, the amazing teachers. You know, I'm sure there are thousands of teachers just like Samuel out there, right?
Yeah.
Who can make a difference, and how do we find them and how do we highlight their achievements?
And empower them, you know, that,
empower
you know,
them.
Yeah, that's the most important thing. And on that topic of the masterclasses, so you've been organizing them for quite a while now, right? I mean, tell me about, you know, some of the ones that have happened. What are sort of the areas that you've been focusing on?
So we started this last year when we saw that there was a need. So all this while we've been working with school leaders and middle leaders, and a lot of teachers have been reaching out to us and like, well, how can I be part of this? And then we started organizing masterclass, especially for them, where the idea was that you can learn it today and you can implement it immediately in your classroom. Because a lot of times we find, and in my experience as a teacher, when I did professional development, I'm like, oh, okay, it's very theoretical. How do I implement this in my classroom, right? Like, okay, now what? What do I do with all this knowledge? So the idea was for us to give something very, very meaningful, but immediately they can implement. And Sam has been doing the last three masterclass, I think, where we spoke about assessments, we spoke about how do you engage students, how do you build positive culture in your classrooms, even online classrooms. Mm-hmm. And we've got amazing reception from teachers. Our masterclass is now, at that time it was a paid series, but now it is fully sponsored by Yayasan Saim Dabi. So for this whole year, we have like 9 series coming up.
Okay.
And yeah, I think every topic is really meaningful.
Okay, excellent. And it's paid for, so you know, teachers don't even have to pay for it. So they just need to apply for it, am I correct?
Yes. Okay. You just need to register for it and then they're in.
Oh, excellent. And I understand there's one coming up very soon on the 22nd of January. What's happening there?
Yeah, so this one is on differentiated learning. So we are working with the teacher, her name is Chegu Aisha, who is like an edufluencer teacher. Yeah. I think that's what they're called. So she's, in short, like really amazing and has done very interesting stuff on differentiated learning. And I think differentiated learning is an area that a lot of teachers struggle with, because you're in a classroom with 35 students, right? How do I cater my lesson plan to all of you? So I feel like this topic is really timely, especially now that students are coming back to school with potentially different learning gaps.
Yeah.
You know, some those who had access to online learning would potentially be okay. Those who didn't have access would have had like almost a 2-year learning gap. So how can we design our lessons to cater to the needs of these different learners? I think this is what will be covered by Puan Aisha. And you know, future masterclass, we're also looking at the social and emotional and mental well-being of our students. We'll be looking at different technologies that you can still use in hybrid learning, and just really how can you support the student in post-pandemic, or are we post-pandemic, in the recovery
phase,
or school reopening stage. Yeah. So these are the masterclass that will be coming up as well.
Okay, that's excellent. And gosh, I mean, like as a parent, I'm interested to come and listen to what's happening as well. Yes. Who knows, something maybe in the future, right? I guess, you know, so those are the sorts of things in the pipeline. What about other things aside from masterclasses? You know, what else is Pemimpin GSL working on, you know, for this, maybe just for this year, I suppose?
Yeah. So we're starting our third cohort of our fellowship program. Our fellowship program is the one where we work with school leaders exclusively. And our third cohort will be with Orang Asli schools. This cohort is funded by ECM Libra Foundation. So we are working with 15 Orang Asli schools that we are in the midst of selecting now.
Okay.
Again, to support the school leaders, to provide them with the two-year training and contextualizing, you know, how can they help the Orang Asli students in the post-pandemic recovery stage of learning now to make up for the learning loss that has happened in the past 2 years. Because we know that, you know, students from rural schools, students from Orang Asli schools, even urban poor schools are potentially the most marginalized during this whole pandemic.
Yeah.
So that's the one cohort that we have coming up.
Okay.
We also have our middle leaders cohort that is ongoing. We have about 190 middle leaders in this cohort that will be continuing on from the last year. And we also have our online cohort for school leaders. It's a huge cohort of 100 schools, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
So 100 schools, and they are from all over Malaysia. So we support them online. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. That's a lot on your plate.
<Yes. laughs>
For someone who started 5 years ago on her own. Well done. And congratulations. And I guess, you know, is there any sort of support from the public that would be most helpful to you guys, if at all?
Yeah. Yeah, I think just sharing the word on like what Pemimpin does and, you know, getting it out there that, you know, investing in teachers is very important. I think, you know, so Pemimpin, we work with fundraising. So we fundraise, right, for our program so that we can keep it free for teachers, because we don't want to impose any burden on teachers and we want them to get access to all of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just for funders out there to see the importance of investing in teachers and solutions in education doesn't just have to focus on students, and that's not the only thing that can change it, right?
Yeah.
It's also working when you work with teachers, when you work with students, when you work with school leaders, and investing in teachers is investing in education. And I hope more than ever people are aware of this, and especially, you know, funders and organizations out there.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much, Cheryl, for joining me today and for sharing all of that. And I guess, you know, for more information, people can just head to your website, which is
yes.
pemimpingsl.org. And I believe you also have social media accounts?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Everything,
so
the whole works.
All of it. Okay. So Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all of it. Okay. All right. So just search for Pemimpin GSL if you'd like to find out more, or just head to the website, pemimpingsl.org. My thanks again to my guest today, Cheryl Ann Fernando. She is the CEO of Pemimpin GSL. This has been our first episode of Curriculum for 2022, where we discuss the A to Z of education. If you miss any part of today's interview or any previous Live and Learn interviews, you can search for the podcast at bfm.my/learn, or you can find it on the BFM app. This has been Curriculum on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.